them, but I did get some good interviews up there, and I am going to play Chris Worthington's speech. Some of this is in the hope that he said some good things. The problem is that, again, no critics of this whole affair were allowed on the podium, of course. The only thing we could do was circulate flyers through the crowd, which I did do, and I'm glad I did, and I'll be reading that flyer later in the show. Much of the information regular listeners have heard before, but it still may interest you. Now let's hear a little from Chris Worthington of Berkeley, who I hope is not apologizing for some Wingnuts chalked swastika on the sidewalk that probably referred again to the police abuse that Andy Ross was provoking. Let's hear this.
I see in the crowd today people who I have stood beside and walked along with in civil rights demonstrations, in defense of homeless people, in defense of women's right to choose, in defense of dozens of political causes, locally, nationally, and internationally. I also see in the crowd people who have passionately opposed me on many political issues, who have called me names, who have attacked me physically and verbally, and who have very different opinions than I do. Even on this very platform, we have dramatically different points of view and visions for the city of Berkeley. To me, this is a testament to the beauty, the strength, and the wonder that is the city of Berkeley, that in spite of our many differences on many different political issues, on a central issue such as this, we can set aside our differences and join together in a united way to condemn any semblance of anti-Semitism. In talking to the UC students about what is going on here in the last few days, the real tragedy to me is not the person or persons who have done these acts. I'm not thinking revenge. I want to go get those people and put them in jail. I'm not, you know, that I don't think that's what's on the idea of most people's minds, although we'd love to find out who was doing it and try to get them to think more closely about what they're doing. But revenge, I don't think, is the motivating factor for most of us here. I think one of the things that has been missing so far today is a question of education. Do we simply stand here and express our anger, our frustration, recrimination? Do we lament prejudice and discrimination? Or do we actually try to accomplish something very practical in education? Some of the people who have been talking about this say, well, I don't really understand. You know, there's a swastika in front of his store, or there's swastika on flyers. I think that means that they're against the Nazi-like plans to arrest homeless people on Telegraph Avenue. Now, what? But, and that, so I understand that there's a lot of confusion in the community, that they don't understand that this swastika is such a powerful symbol and evokes so much emotion and so much fear and so much history. We need to be teaching at UC Berkeley to all of our students and in the high schools and junior high schools what is the history of anti-Semitism.
Right on.
And if we have hundreds of students and many prominent political activists who I have talked to in the last few days, and they don't understand that having swastikas on these paper and having a swastika in front of this store, that that is anti-Semitic. Where is our education?
Can we go back to calling bad people pigs, the people who do things we don't like, pigs? There was never a nationwide appeal to pigs.
My preference is not to call anybody any names and to stick to the public policy issues that we're talking about. I understand your sentiment, and you write great poetry.
Okay.
But one of the key things here is people think of Berkeley as the bastion of political correctness. Is there any place else in America where people are so passionately fighting against racism, against sexism, against homophobia, against ageism? We have the Grey Panthers here. We have so many groups dedicated to so many isms. And anti-Semitism is one of those powerful isms. And the swastika is one of the most dangerous threats to people who are Jewish. And people who are protesting against the attack on the homeless need to be a little more sophisticated and understand you can protest against these reactionary proposals to arrest the homeless or to cite them and then eventually get them arrested for not paying their citations. You can protest against that, and I will be one of the first to join you. But as much as we must protest against that, we also must not fall into these divisive things by using symbols that hurt people. When I was a little kid, one of my favorite movies was Sound of Music. And one of my friends said, well, what is the message of Sound of Music? And we were kids, so it was pretty simplistic. The message was, nuns are good and Nazis are bad. So now, thinking of how people see Berkeley and seeing this serious problem with swastikas, I guess I'd like to make a very simple childlike suggestion of making people realize whether you're an activist fighting against the anti-homeless laws or whether you're anyone in the city of Berkeley, peace signs are good and swastikas are bad. Very simple, very childlike, but we need progressive activists to understand, as well-meaning as you are, if you're using a swastika, you've got to stop. There is no safe way. There is no condom that you can put on a swastika. And swastikas have got to go. The only swastika that I ever want to see in the city of Berkeley is one that has a cross through it. Thank you.
And that was City Council member from Berkeley, Chris Worthington, talking at this Andy Ross organized rally against hate speech. It would be more pertinent, of course, if there were some real hate speech to rally against, but there wasn't. And, of course, that's one of the facts that, unfortunately, Chris Worthington did not make too clear, the opacity of real hate speech and the manufactured nature of this whole conference. For the purpose of completeness, I'll play a few more. The next speaker, I'm not even sure who it is, probably someone inveighing against anti-Semitism, but after which I hope to give you some reactions from the street, which give you, I think, a more accurate picture of what really was going on.
Mr. Samar Kramer, who represents the workers of Cody's.
I'm the representative of Local 790, and we represent the workers, most of the employees of Cody's. This is a house of language. This is a playground of images. This is a temple of words. And those of us who live in this house and who play in this playground and who worship at this temple want to give a message. The words of hate, the words of Nazism, the words of racism and fascism are words that we will fight as if they were bricks against our heads. Now, we have been told that it's likely that these words were deployed by isolated individuals not involved in anything other than their own pathologies. I prefer to believe that point of view. I am an optimist. I live in America and I continue to vote. What else could I be but an optimist? But if that is true, then like others who spoke today, I want to speak to those who talk to those individuals. And I want to remind everyone that the swastika, the Jewish star used as a target on one's back, have never been deployed as a lexicon for helping the homeless. They were used to make people homeless. They were never used to help youth. They were used to arrest youth. They were used to conscript youth. They were used to put youth in concentration camps. And if we know that, and if we talk among ourselves about that reality, then this will have been a very important occasion for school. But I want to mention one other thing that I don't think enough attention has been paid to. We all stand up and denounce racism, and we all stand up and denounce anti-Semitism. But there is another kind of ideology that has been associated with these incidents, and that is the moral blindness to associate Andy Roth, a Jewish businessman, among other things, a Jewish businessman who I know is praying for a good Christmas, with the murderers of Vietnamese children, or the murderers of Jewish children, or the murderers of African American children. This is disgusting. It's time to put a stop to it. This has nothing to do with political correctness. That is a phrase formed by the most powerful advocates of political correctness, the people who rule our country and want us to think in lockstep like them or stop thinking at all. But I am the inheritor of a family, some of whose members went up a chimney. And Ishmael Reed is the inheritor of a family, some of whose members went down to the bottom of the Atlantic in chains in ghost ships. We both shop at this store. We both like this store. And it is time for people who want to change the world to understand the world. And this is not a world where Andy Ross can either be targeted with a swastika because he is a Jew, or identified with the swastika because he happens to have a point of view that might disagree with yours.
I'm going to interrupt this eloquent but heavily misguided speaker who's talking up in Berkeley in a pro-Ross rally that was supposedly against anti-Semitism. It really seemed to be more about electing Shirley Dean and again passing her anti-homeless sitting ban agenda. Notice that in this man's speech you see nothing about the content of what's really going on, which is that Ross, for years, has pushed for anti-homeless laws. And some people associate those anti-homeless laws with repressive regimes, such as the Nazis. Now, indeed, Andy Ross is certainly not a Nazi. He is certainly not a fascist in the direct sense of any kind of political specific, whatever that term specifically means. But the swastika has a very quick, clear meaning to other people, which is police abuse, police power, a destruction of a group of people, injustice, and it's pretty sloppy terminology. But the terminology, however sloppy, should not be used to cover what it is talking about, and that is real actions by bookshop owner Andy Ross, as we have real actions by bookshop owner Neil Coonerty, to disadvantage, disenfranchise, and disperse a population of people who are poor for the benefit of the merchant community. I don't think it's much benefit. I think it's a mistake to do, but it's the agenda. It's the agenda in Berkeley of a certain political group. These speakers are not referring to that agenda. They are very carefully avoiding talking about that agenda. You don't hear them talking about it on the platform. Instead, you hear them denouncing swastikas and broken windows. Ross had no windows broken by anti-Semites. A couple people having a fight broke one of his windows in error. No one has ever claimed that's anti-Semitic, except perhaps Ross, although I've never seen any proof of that. As I said, a graffitied swastika on the sidewalk, a graffitied Star of David, when these are the only two incidents, and a little teeny gold cross written on the window becomes the basis for pounding the drums to support a merchant whose policies are repressive toward homeless people. It is the misuse of the issue of anti-Semitism. It is the misuse of the issue of hate crime to redirect hatred against activists who are trying to assure civil rights for poor and homeless people. I wrote the following flyer, which I distributed, called Enough Hate Against the Young and Poor, Time for a New Beginning. For years, the police, some downtown merchants, the Berkeley city manager, and key conservative politicians have warred against the young and the homeless with provocative, unenforceable bans against non-criminal behavior in public spaces. A sleeping ban, a sitting ban, a spare changing ban. In 1993, community activist David Nadell successfully challenged the Downtown Business Association's abuse of an archaic 40s no furniture on the sidewalk statute, which was being used to drive away the poor and homeless on Shattuck Avenue. In 1994, the next year, despite strong opposition, reactionary forces in Berkeley passed Proposition O, an unconstitutional sitting and spare changing ban, which was quickly set aside by the courts. In the years that followed, police continued to harass the visible poor for sitting, even after that ban had been tossed out by courts and city council. This year, at the instigation of zero-tolerance merchants like Andy Ross, police used intimidation and phony trespass threats to drive away innocent young people. In June, City Manager Keene privately met with conservative office seekers and paid out $79,000 in public funds for a new pogrom against the poor. Operation Avwatch launched animal control, mental health, street cleaning, and tripled police patrols against the street community. The program was secretly extended until August 15th and may still be in effect. Ross, Mayor Dean, and other right-wingers failing in their initiative to ban sitting tried a quick end run through City Council with a new sitting ban. It failed after strong protest. Now Andy Ross is crying anti-Semitism because his own support of police state tactics has prompted angry reactions from some targets of his sweeps. Scapegoating the young, poor, and homeless is a hate crime. Devising laws to drive them from public spaces is a hate crime. The sleeping ban and Ross's proposed sitting ban are two hate crimes. None of us favor graffiti that attacks race, ethnicity, or religion. Idiots who write anti-Semitic graffiti debase the public dialogue. Likewise, using police to criminalize a group is a tactic of repressive regimes. But a swastika can sometimes be an anti-Nazi symbol that attacks police abuse, i.e. calls hate crimes against the poor Nazi. The Ross controversy has nothing to do with his being Jewish. Poor Jewish people are also targeted by anti-homeless police sweeps. The issue is a hate-free city where all of us can live together. We invite Andy Ross to join the unhoused and the youth community in supporting an end to hate crimes like the sleeping ban and joining together to find non-coercive solutions to social problems. And this was a flyer called Time for a New Beginning that I distributed in Berkeley around noon at this rally, where you're hearing some very eloquent speakers, as I said, eloquently misguided speakers who have been set off by Ross's PR, it seems. And that's what I was doing today, and that's why I was delayed, and I'm giving you a somewhat piecemeal show. Let's grab another piece from Radio Watson, an interview that I've been promising to air for a long time. This is Radio Watson broadcaster talking with me about a week and a half ago. Here he is.
January, February months of 1990.
And with Radio Watson broadcaster and, oh, I don't know.
Collective member.
Collective member, Anthony Propernik.
Yes.
And Anthony, you came by the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective on Monday, kind of gave us some input from Radio Watson, which has been on the air since 1997, and you've been broadcasting on and off since then. Your station is mainly Spanish language, correct?
That's correct.
And what kind of shows do you have, and tell us a little bit about the station.
Well, we have a majority, it's actually a community-run station. The members that were involved were definitely members of the community, and the reason why we had such a strong number, or a high number of Spanish-only stations is because it sort of represented the our audience, or the community that we are broadcasting to. The majority of the community is Spanish-speaking. However, we did have one English program, and they're expanding into even having a Portuguese station. And as far as I want to go back to, in terms of when Radio Watson first came on the air, there were some remnants, now that I think about it, before 1997. In the summer of 96, there was a couple of programs, just local readings and things that were, when the radio, actually when we first got the equipment. So on and off, I guess, since the summer of 1996.
Now, Radio Watson has been named, I understand, as one of the three radio stations in the country that has significant community support. Is that accurate? I should say micro stations, or as some derogatorily call us, pirate stations. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding. I don't know how this information was collected. This is sort of information that had been passed on to us in terms of, well, there was research done during and prior to the lawsuit up in
Berkeley,
the recent lawsuit up in Berkeley with Free Radio Berkeley. And you were recognized as being one of the strongest community-based radio stations.
And who were the other two, do you know?
There was one in San Marcos, Texas, and another small station in New Jersey.
So,
I just want to re-emphasize that I believe that especially the one in San Marcos, Texas, was definitely more developed within the community than we are. In terms of locality to the recent lawsuits and the struggles, I think that Radio Watson is much closer to the location of the actual suit and what's happening.
Right, and Free Radio Berkeley. Although, as I understand it from interviews with an anonymous but well-informed source in Free Radio generally, he tells me that stations across the country, other than those in California for some reason, strangely enough because California had this contrary decision by Judge Claudia Wilkin up in Berkeley, are being closed down. So it's interesting that California stations are, for the moment, not suffering the kind of attrition that apparently is happening in other parts of the country, according to the informed source, which I hope to get on the air, and less anonymous. It's always better when you have a person, if he or she can, coming out and talking publicly.
So I'm wondering if that's a result of the recent sort of the suit in California, in Berkeley, and sort of there's maybe a pressure or a sense of fight by micro or pirate radio stations, as they like to call us, in California. So the FCC maybe has relaxed a little bit in this state.
Well, it actually hasn't. You know, it has, as you know. In fact, I believe it's even threatened your station with some kind of action. It's threatened a station in.
It caused us to go off the air, actually. So.
Indeed, but you're back on the air again at the moment. Or?
Well, I'm really unaware. I know that we were shut down, and
not sure
we have to clam up on that situation. I think that we are off the air right now. And,
so if anyone wants to see whether Radio Watson is on the air, tune to 96.3 and just listen if you're in Watsonville. I mean, if one would want to find out. Not wishing to break the silence at the moment, but so yeah, I know Free Radio Monterey, as they call themselves, or actually they call themselves Radio Free Monterey, has been visited by the FCC. A broadcaster in Big Sur was visited. There were several broadcasters in San Jose that were shut down. Again, none of them by court action. All of them by threats to the landlord, and they voluntarily let the FCC on their premises. So California is still being visited by the FCC, but apparently they're not taking the kind of legal action, or let's say draconian SWAT team action, that they've taken, for example, in Florida. And I guess the situation in Berkeley is a legal case, but the Free Radio Berkeley itself has shut down, and I understand that they are now going on the air again today at the Long Hall, doing a public broadcast tonight, tomorrow night, Friday night that is, to challenge the FCC's monopolization of the airways, and essentially It's saying to poor people, you can't use the airwaves unless you are a part of corporate radio, unless you are a part of the $100,000 stations, and that's about the minimum that's required to do all the paperwork and get the engineering studies
done. Equipment.
Right, if you want to follow the FCC procedures that are currently in existence. Now...
And I definitely can guarantee you that Radio Watson has never had more than maybe $1,000 in its hands in order to sort of begin that process for getting a license.
What kind of community support does Radio Watson have? I know that Free Radio Santa Cruz, to me it's always seemed to be kind of a fringe station. I know there are those who will take issue with me, but a group of people who are, let's say, committed and zealous in their views, like myself, but who's don't really have a lot of direct connection with the community in terms of, we've had a phone line frequently, but we don't have large community groups coming to us and requesting to use the station. Have you had that experience, for example, with Spanish-speaking groups in Watsonville?
Yes, and our station, Radio Watson, because we've been sporadic in terms of, we haven't had the long haul, the much experience in radio, a lot of our programmers are rookie broadcasters, and so we've had some problems, and then we were recently shut down by the FCC. We've had some problems pretty much maintaining the community base. However, over the past, from what I understand, when I was out of the country over the past six months, there was a strong push to involve community members to come on, with radio experience or not, to come on and try out the radio station. What it's done is it's created a network of friends of friends of friends that have come on or that have called in that tune in to our station and are expecting, to hear their friends or to hear their music or their voice through the different programs. So I would say in the last probably 6 months to a year, Radio Watson had developed that strong community base.
Now, what's the situation with corporate radio, or I should say, non-micro-broadcasting radio in Watsonville? Here in Santa Cruz, we have a university station, which, if you can occasionally get a quick blurb on, or there's the big corporate right-wing station, KSCO, and then there's the politically correct, don't say anything against our city council, liberal, progressive station, KUSP. What's the situation like in Watsonville for the folks who want to talk about issues like police brutality and so forth?
Well, I would be a good example of one of those radio rookies. I'm not real familiar with media and the use of media, and I haven't analyzed it much, except for the past several months. But there really isn't an access, and especially when you talk about, when you consider the language barriers, there might be some access. Of course, some of the stations you mentioned here in Santa Cruz also reach down to South County and Watsonville, since we're still in the Santa Cruz County. But people don't necessarily have the access to express themselves in Spanish, in other words, I don't see that as a possible avenue for people in Watsonville or South County.
Well, are there state radio stations in Watsonville that are Spanish language stations that are also corporate stations?
That are based in Watsonville?
Yes.
Not that I know of, no.
Really? Even though Watsonville is a town of 30,000 people, right?
Exactly. Hmm. And there is not one radio station that I'm aware of located in Watsonville that... pretty much positive, 99% sure there's not a station in Watsonville.
So it sounds like Radio Watson is very, Radio Watson is very important for Watsonville. Much more so, let's say, even than Free Radio Santa Cruz is for Santa Cruz, in the sense that there are no radio stations there at all.
Exactly.
How many watts is Free Radio Watson?
Before we shut down, we were up to 15 watts.
Uh-huh. And how big of a broadcasting area did this give you?
Well, I don't know. If you're familiar with the area, and in terms of, we would reach in any direction out to about, I would say, 10 miles.
Wow.
A radius. Out to Corralitos at good times, uh-huh. And down to the South County and the Las Lomas area if on a good day as well.
Did you cover controversial topics like the United Farm Workers and issues around police misconduct that came up, I know, when youth were being targeted by police?
Yes. Well, that's an interesting question. I work with juvenile offenders and youth in the county, but in terms of in respect to the UFW issues, yeah, that's really, I did a local news program, and the UFW is news in Watsonville. That's that struggle with farm workers and sort of workers' rights issues has been sort of the front news, the front of local news in Watsonville. So we did provide both in Spanish and English. We provided coverage on those controversial topics.
Mm-hmm. Were you like a nightly news or a twice nightly news or?
We were a once a week nightly news.
Uh-huh.
And in English, which I did the English program, but we also had a Spanish program that did twice a week. I think afternoon on weekends and night during the week.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know the current status of the station is uncertain, and you're kind of in the process of making decisions about that, and you don't have any clear word for us on that at the moment. But if folks want to support the station, what can they do?
Well, supporting the station indirectly, they can definitely support, they can support Free Radio Santa Cruz and sort of, and keep tune on, you know, listening to 96.3, I guess, all over the county and listen in for ideas and support that maybe they'll request. Directly, I'm really not certain what they can do at this time. If for some reason we decided to come back on the air, we could maybe put a pitch into the Robert Norris or your show or maybe come back into Free Radio Santa Cruz and maybe...
Oh, definitely. You should give us a public service announcement, which we will broadcast.
Maybe that would be the way to do it. But at this time, there's no real way to support, except for keep your ears open and listen in for any support we might may ask. And it could, there's a chance that we could come around in the next few weeks or months or in the near future to ask for that support.
Well, that's great, Anthony. We're talking to Anthony Propernik. Of the Radio Watson Collective. Anything you want to say before we leave you dangling in the airwaves?
Dangling in the airwaves. Well, I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak, and I really support what you guys are doing at Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I hope that the listeners are enjoying and appreciating the sort of no-nonsense and free speech that we're providing over the air, and they'd support our struggle against maybe the FCC or any legal matters we face.
Excellent. You'll keep us advised. If we can help, we'll do that.
Okay, thank you, Robert.
And you had something else you wanted to add?
Yes. I just wanted to stress sort of the importance and this the access and how the access to free radio or community radio in Watsonville has especially helped and benefited the population of Watsonville. The community is made up of farm workers who we know are generally not are not located on the higher income scales or even the middle income scales of our community, and sort of with, as we touched on earlier, how the FCC licensing process discriminates against poor people. It is especially so down in Watsonville in South County, where you know maybe the average income is around $11,000 annually of a family, and we down in Radio Watson feel it's very important for these people of low income or poor people have the access to media and airwaves to express their words.
Yeah, we agree similarly here.
Okay.
Is that pretty much, does that cover it?
That covers it.
Hey, thank you, Anthony.
Okay, Robert.
And that was Anthony of our sister station in Watsonville, Radio Watson, also broadcasting at 96.3 FM. You're tuned right now to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Give a call to our voicemail for more information about the station, 427-4523. You may want to get a program yourself and cover topics we don't cover on the air. We invite you to do that. You may check us out on the email at frsc@cruzeo.com. Or contact us by snail mail at P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. We have had a talk line into the studio and hope to have one again soon, hopefully tomorrow, in fact. And then that comes in, you'll be a part of the dialogue even as we're on the air. If you hear something with which you disagree, in the meantime, give me a call at 423-4833 and leave a message of whatever length. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe Spears' Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor. We're going to be going on until 8 o'clock. And I remind you, if you want to join the Beach Flats dialogue, you can scamper on over to Park Place. I think it's 212 Park Place. Anyway, it's the community center out there in the Beach Flats where the council members are making the usual motions to include housing elements in their plan that don't really exist as of yet. Maybe you can make them real by asking searching enough questions and loud enough demands. That's happening starting from 7 o'clock tonight, so it's happening even as I speak. On Sunday, we played part of an interview with Wanda Knight, a woman who reported that she was seized and evicted from the beach boardwalk, forcibly separated from her child for, get this, criticizing the Ku Klux Klan in comments overheard by a security guard who came up to her and ordered her to leave the property. Her child was only returned to her 2 hours later, apparently in the custody, but in the company of her friend, not the child's guardian. And we have interviewed her on the air several times, actually played you two tapes in three different segments. And part of the tape we played you last Sunday was less than broadcast perfect. However, I'm going to skip ahead. We have actually better tape later on in that interview. You're listening to Wanda Knight talking about problems with the Seaside Company, who she is taking to court and suing. And she also talks about general issues of racism in the community. For instance, in Felton, she claims that sheriff's deputies have been reportedly stopping her for the crime of driving while black. She's had additional difficulties in the educational system. And we'll let's hear her speak for herself using her own words.
Jordan told me that he had had similar problems with the Seaside Security had sort of insisted on him leaving. He went to the office and demanded to know why and couldn't get a satisfactory answer. Let me ask you a few questions that perhaps are a little more sensitive, but try to be candid about it or else even decline to answer at this time. Did you at any point spit on the ground or act in a physically hostile manner toward the security guard before he ordered you off the property?
Well, I spit on the ground. Something flew in my mouth and I spit on the ground.
What was the context in which you spat on the ground? Did you spit as an expression of distaste? Did you spit indicating that you didn't like what he was saying? Or?
No, he wasn't even near me when this happened.
Oh, you spat on the ground because of something that was distasteful in your mouth?
Or? Yes, something flew in my mouth. I spit on the ground.
This was before your conversation with him?
Yes.
And did he refer to that when he spoke to you?
No.
He didn't?
No. Wait, I'm trying to remember it. I'm getting late.
Sure, take your time.
Yes, he did.
What did he say?
I said, I was spitting on the ground. I said, a lot of people here spit on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And was that the first thing he said? Or was that after other conversations?
The first thing he said to me is, oh, you don't have respect for authority. I was eating, looking around, see if I notice anybody, you know, that I know. Mm-hmm. And I said, excuse me, sir, you're talking to me. Mm-hmm. And he repeated that quote again. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are you talking about?
How long would you say the conversation with him took?
Maybe a couple minutes.
And he had he radioed for these three other security guards to come over, and or did he hail them verbally? What happened there?
He had radioed them before, because before I know it, three of them was on me. And I'm only 5 feet and a quarter, and these people were real tall.
So, what's happened since then? I know that you also spoke about a number of other incidents where you've been trying to combat racism in your community that's impacted you in a very personal way, in terms of the education of your son, in terms of, ironically, a reverse form of racism where you were defending a white boy who was accused of white separatism.
Yeah.
And I guess you also have complained of a number of what you consider to be driving while black type stops by deputies in Felton where there was no real basis for the stops.
Right. There's no citations. There's no tickets. You know, in a matter of a month, been stopped like 9 to 12 times, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke about these issues publicly, I guess, at the June 5th rally against racism at the town clock.
No, I wasn't there. That wasn't at the town clock.
I'm
it was
sorry.
Up here at Felton at the covered bridge. It was called Stop the Racism.
Stop the Racism at the covered bridge.
And the only thing I talked about was the boardwalk, because I didn't want to overwhelm people.
Right, or appear to be a complete loony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But sometimes what one says, even if it's true, if it's in large doses, people cannot take it in all at once and assume that you must be either exaggerating or fantasizing.
But I have witnesses. I have a witness that have seen me stopped 6 times in a week.
And is that going to be involved in your lawsuit, or are we just talking about the beach boardwalk?
Well, the lawsuit is with the beach boardwalk, but I am going to pursue that lawsuit, too.
Now, you you brought this issue to the racism covered wagon meeting, and I guess you've also spoken to city council candidate, an African American, and a preacher, or I should say a churchman, I'm not sure what the designation is, Pat Clark. What's his response been?
I had spoken at the Progressive Baptist Church when they had an NAACP meeting when the KKK had first got here and was recruiting and had threatened them, mm-hmm. which they had a recording and it was in the newspaper and on the radio. Mm-hmm. And then I talked at the Covered Bridge about the boardwalk.
Have you gotten any support in terms of people saying, let's get together and share information, let's do outreach to others and find out what they know, or have people largely sort of said, oh, very interesting, and then sort of disappeared on you?
No, I'm getting support from other people who want to get together and try to get a tribunal or something, and also from another radio station also.
Uh-huh. What radio station is that?
KSCO.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Interesting. What is there a particular talk show host on KSCO who's been interested in this situation?
Ted Jefferson.
Ted Jefferson, who's also an African-American.
Yes, and he was also at the rally.
And you know when his show is for those who are listening in who might want to tune into that show?
I believe it'll be Wednesday between 2 and 4.
Now, what about your own experience with racism in the last month? Anything new happen that you think deserves public attention, either in terms of what's happened to you or credible reports you heard from others?
Yeah, there's one incident where a friend had went into a store with the receipt and had the merchandise and wanted to exchange it. And they called the cops and said he stole it. And,
we're not talking about Ricky Prim, are we?
Huh?
Are we talking about Ricky Prim?
Uh-huh. Yep.
That was about a year ago.
Oh.
Unless we're talking about a new incident.
Okay.
We actually interviewed him at length in front of the Cat and Canary.
Uh-huh.
And you know how that's resolved? Has he gone to a lawyer or done
anything? Yes, he has.
And what's the result been, you know?
I don't know the result right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he has. I had talked to him. And then I talked to another friend of mine who works at a local store. And she's black and her husband's white. And there was an incident where he got arrested for a bogus charge. I'm not at liberty to say what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they proceeded to arrest her, but they didn't think that the charge was valid enough, so they wanted to make up something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting together with them.
Good. Well, I hope you can give us a full report. I know that Prem was arrested at least once at Cat and Canary, and his friend was also with him.
Yeah.
His father, I guess, was taken away.
Yeah.
And then Prim wanted a $10,000 settlement, and I talked to the management of Cat and Canary at that time, and they apparently didn't want to go for that. It was a rather tangled situation. Ricky never got back to me, so I never heard the outcome of it.
Oh, I don't know, but I'd seen him last week.
Oh, okay. Well, let's tell him that he should get back in touch with Robert of Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, all you folks out there, on 96.3 on your dial.
There's one more thing I would like to bring up.
Sure.
I am followed. My name is in Internal Affairs, and I haven't been arrested for anything.
Are you talking Internal Affairs of the Sheriff's or Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz. I guess I don't know the Sheriff.
Felton's is the Sheriff's.
Oh, there's Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz would be inside the city limits.
Well, I don't know which one it is, but all I heard is that my name is in Internal Affairs. My name's on the website, but that's with the people who are supporting me. But I am being followed, and I am being watched very closely.
And how do you know you're being followed and watched?
Well, when my little son says, hey, Mom, that car's been behind us for over 15 minutes. Look, Mom, that's the same car we've seen before. Look, they're the same people. Now, when a little boy notices it, you know that something's up.
Now, this is an unmarked, you think an unmarked police car?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I think we'd like to follow this further, but right now we're going to leave you. I guess I'll say anybody who's interested in assisting Wanda Knight, who's the woman we're talking to right now, in documenting concerns about racism, harassment by local police authorities, problems with shops and businesses around racism, and give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And I give out your number, but I don't know if you want it given out. I don't know how you feel about that, but I will certainly pass on any caller's concerns to you, Wanda, so you can call them directly.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great.
Does that sound good?
Uh-huh.
Well, I appreciate your giving us this account again. I know it's last time you gave us a much longer account, and it's a really kind of a racking experience to go through.
Yes.
And I understand you also actually have a court date coming up this next week on the 18th.
Yes. And that's for the dogs. I had almost $2,000 fines on my dogs.
Would you feel this is a case of let's say, overreaction by the SBCA, or is this connected in some way? Is this racially motivated, or what's your feeling?
Well, I know that I did not let my dogs out, and they were out. And before I pulled up in my driveway, before I could even get out of my car, the SBCA was right behind me. If I leave my house and come back in a half an hour, my dogs will be out. I put them in the house, here comes the SBCA.
Now, how many times has this happened?
Oh, numerous times. I don't know, about 7 or 8 times.
And how many tickets have you gotten for this?
Well, I got two, but one was $879, and the other one was $920, and I'm fighting that one. I'm not going to, and there was a warrant out for my arrest for that one.
And this will be coming up in what court at what time?
Traffic Court, Department 10, mm-hmm. at 8:30 in the morning.
Okay, I recommend you disqualify Mulligan and get it kicked into another court, or you will be found guilty summarily.
Okay.
And what you should do is you should either, you know, go down there in the morning, stand up before the judge, or go to the clerk
mm-hmm.
at the window and say, I believe Mulligan is prejudiced. You don't have to give a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like my case transferred. I would like to disqualify him. They'll ask you to sign a statement to the effect that you swear under penalty of perjury that you believe he is prejudiced. And you can say that. You don't have to prove it. You just have to say you believe it. And it'll throw the case into another court.
Okay.
The problem with Mulligan is, in homeless cases, for instance, we call him Meat Grinder Mulligan. He regularly misinforms people about their rights. He is essentially a meat grinder who turns out fines for the county.
Okay.
And I recommend you disqualify him and kick it into another court, even though it'll mean you'll have to go to another court date.
Oh, that's okay. I don't care, because I'm fighting back.
And if you want to get confirmation, I encourage you to call your attorney, Kate Wells, who's had similar experiences with, we used to call him Mad Dog Mulligan, then we decided he wasn't really that excitable. He was just a regular hack who turned out, fines as required by the county and paid no attention to people's basic rights.
Okay. Mulligan.
John Mulligan.
Okay, I'm going to remember that one. I'm writing it down.
Right. So, the first thing you have to do when your case comes up is, or actually should even beforehand, you can stand and ask a question. Your Honor, if I wish to disqualify you, I would like to do that.
Okay.
He may then make you sit through the entire proceeding to do it, in which case I suggest you file a complaint with the...